Okay. It's great that you're talking. Some people are looking at me, though, like, I don't want to talk to the person next to me. Okay, let's talk. Talk to me. Okay, what is that one thing you get up every morning for that you have been doing for the last 10 years, 15 years, 20 years? And, of course, for this morning, it was even more profound because for them, they've been doing for a lot longer than you have. Obviously, a lot of you don't have, don't see any gray hairs here except for mine, maybe. A lot of you are still very young, but this is what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life. In fact, that's what you're waking up every morning for now. Even now, as in university, as a lot of you are, you're working towards this. So what's that one thing that you're going to be waking up every morning for? 6:30, 5:30, 7 o'clock sometimes. Sometimes you might not even come back from wherever you are. You're just going to keep doing that. You're going to go sleep. You're going to need your friends to help keep you going on this thing. What's this thing that you do again and again every day in your life because you're living for it? Now, obviously, most of you thought, I guess it's your work. I guess it's my work. And then you're thinking, but I don't want to say that. I don't want to say I live for my work because I'm the generation that doesn't live for my work. In fact, that's why I'm trying to study now so I don't have to work, because someone told me sometime, was it my dad, was it my granddad, was it my uncle? I can't trust my uncle, but was it someone who told me that if I work hard and study hard now, I'll be able to play for the rest of my life? Now, there are people here who are older and who have already been working a couple of years. Come on, Lilian, put up your hand. I'll put up my hand. Let's all put up our hands. Those of us who've heard that before, believed it, and now we have been working. Put up your hands, please. Okay? Let's do it, 1, 2, 3. Tell them, it's a lie. Okay? That ain't true at all. Whoever told you, you work now, you enjoy for the rest of your life. Okay, let's not think about it. Let's deal this later. But maybe you're thinking, okay, I guess it's work, but then I don't want to be living for work. But then you think again, it might not be work. It might be what work is about. And a lot of my generation, we're probably the transition between my parents and yours. Okay, your generation is pretty unique. I'll talk about that another time. But my generation, we thought, yeah, I got to work. And I understand that. I respect my granddad for working so hard. Thanks. Thank you, granddad, wherever you are. But at the same time, I'm not really doing this for work. I'm doing this because I want other things. I'm working because of what it gets me. Okay, so maybe you're working for security. I still believe in that. Maybe your generation, you don't care about security. But definitely, I'm still a child of my grandparents. And they left Fujian province because they wanted security. Because Chairman Mao, do you know Chairman Mao? He's not a cat. I know, right? Why would you think that? Yeah, I don't know. But some of you do. It's like, he's not. Chairman Mao is somebody my great-grandparents and grandparents ran away from. Two generations. And the whole urban mythology of them getting in a boat with gold nuggets in the bag and all that kind of stuff, half true at least. Some of you might even know that. And I don't know exactly how it is for some of us, those from who are Indians here. My apologies. I'm a bit stronger in Chinese culture. You can tell me later, okay? Okay? But it's similar, isn't it? You may be working just like your great-grandparents for security. As an expression of what you're doing right now, it's true, isn't it? As something underlying what you're doing right now, sorry. It's true, isn't it? You're actually working for stability. Some of you are a bit more advanced. Some of you are like, yeah, security is for my grandparents. I got that. In fact, my parents have bought me houses already. Actually, what one or two of you have told me stuff like this. I already have houses, not just here, but in Perth. What I'm really working for now is prestige. Power. Some of you are at that advanced state of like, when I go to work, it's because I enjoy feeling powerful. It's not just security for me. It's about the fact that I am in command. I've always been a leader, okay? When there was a scout troop, I joined it. Why? Because I want to be a troop leader. When there's prefects, I joined it. Why? Because I want to be head prefect. None of this like picking up rubbish. More like, you pick up rubbish. That's who I was. That's how I'll always be. And maybe at the same time, it's a combination. Maybe it's a bit of security. Maybe it's a bit of power. Maybe it's a mix. Maybe you can express it something like prestige. Maybe for you, it's not just raw power. It's a standing in community. Maybe it's even something like, you know, you have this deep desire in you not to go to work every morning, not to go to uni to study whatever you're studying. Law, oh my goodness. If I could only bake, if I could only run a cafe. Every time I see a flat white that's not done properly, I'm like, are you kidding me? Every time I see a lasagna that's like too cold, too hot, too warm, the layers are not thin enough, I'm like, look, let me do it. And then you start putting on an apron, and the cafe owner's like, what are you doing? Maybe you're one of those people who has always wanted to express yourself, own something, do something creative. And then, because of prestige, because for your dad, it's so important that he can tell all your uncles, my daughter's a lawyer. So you don't want to give up on that. Maybe that's the reason why you're trudging away, taking an MRT, taking a bus, going to uni every day, because you realize it's important to keep pleasing your dad. It's important that your uncles recognize that your dad has this daughter who's a lawyer, that you're not going to be made fun of by your cousins when you get asked during Chinese New Year, hey, what are you doing now? I bake lasagna. I mean, why laugh? Maybe inside you think you want to do it, but then there's no prestige to it. Law sounds better. I work 7 to 12 for 10 ringgit an hour. What are you, a lawyer? Wow, fantastic. You're underpaid. Wow, fantastic. What a great thing to do. Maybe, that was a joke, guys. That's actually how underpaid you are as a lawyer. But maybe it's prestige. Maybe it's power. Maybe it's security. Maybe it's a combination of those things tied up to your family. Or quite likely, actually, for all of you, although you don't seem that way, maybe it's just plain happiness. Maybe number one goal for all these things is simply you. You want to be happy. So for now, you're happy to go along with that and do that law degree. Or for now, you're happy to work, and you're actually happy to work. I mean, you don't fully enjoy it sometimes, but then you'd rather not be somewhere baking lasagna, feeling like a bit down on yourself, being yelled at by your boss. Maybe work actually makes you kind of happy, or maybe it's money. For you, when you buy that bag, even though to your guy friend or your boyfriend, it looks about the same as the last 5 bags, you're like, what? You have no idea. Go away. Okay, maybe for you, that car, even though it roughly looks the same as your dad's, it makes you happy. These things make you happy. So being significant makes you happy. Having a prestigious job makes you happy. In fact, one day you're going to bake lasagna because that makes you happy. And that's happy because now you've done your law thing, you can bake lasagna. HAPPY. Maybe for your generation, that's really why you wake up every morning, ultimately. Even though you look sometimes a little bit sad, this is really what's going on. Now, whatever you are working for, whatever you are living for, whatever your life has looked like the past 15, 20 years, and as a result, what it will keep looking like for the next 20, 30, 40 years, you must admit tonight that is your everything. It could be lasagna, it could be a girl, it could be that club, it could be money, but you're actually living for that. As shallow as it may sound to you, even as you admit it, or as sad or difficult, that is your everything. You might actually say, like our grandparents, you know, I don't actually live for anything. I think in life, moderation is the key. I think it's important just to take things not in extreme ends, you know. It's just like, okay, let's not say everything has got to go into this. Let's spread our eggs into different baskets. Maybe you're that typical Chinese businessman person who thinks, you know, I think let's not take things to an extreme. Christianity as well. You know, I hear this bunch of people here in this CRC thing, they take things very seriously. Don't do that, boy. Maybe that's what you've heard many times. But in the end, you're already doing that. On a daily basis, you're already doing that. Because you're not just working on a daily basis. You're actually treasuring this thing. Maybe not every day, maybe not every second, maybe not feeling it all the time, maybe your heart is not even always happy, but actually, you're treasuring it and your heart is there. Jesus says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now, Jesus is right. Every human being treasures something or some things. That's something you have to realize about yourself. Maybe you were taught to be kind of moderate, and in your generation, especially as I interact with you, it comes out as, boy, what do you want to eat tonight? Don't know. So do you want this box of Lego, or you want to buy something else with your money? Don't know. Do you care at all? Don't know. Maybe your generation is the whole from moderation into I don't care, but actually you care. And we know that, right? We have friends, girlfriends, boyfriends. Say, what are you going to eat tonight? Don't know. Nema, anything lah, you choose lah, darling. You go there. Why are we here? See, you care. After 40 years, something will come out. You'll say, I care. I mean, maybe I didn't express that, but you should know. You should know. You care. Behind that semblance of superficial moderation and like, I'm just calm, okay? I'm like Buddha on this thing. I'm just like chill. Actually, the truth is, you care a lot. And that's how you live your life. Jesus is right. Everyone treasures something, someone, or some things. Now, first part of tonight, you have to make sure you identify this and you acknowledge it. It might not actually be money, you know. Your generation doesn't seem to care that much about money. Your parents are very worried about this. But my dad was constantly, he's like, I know you don't care about money. You're a crazy person. Or constantly, right? Maybe your parents are thinking, you need to treasure money more. But your generation doesn't quite care about that. Maybe it's something else. So you need to identify that tonight. But oftentimes, whatever generation you may belong to, whether you're post-Merdeka or before, the reality is our work indicates a huge amount of what we actually care for us. It actually shows what we're prepared to die for, what we're prepared to get that train or to get on that train for every single day, to take public transport, to study hard for. You can tell by how much we're going to invest and we have invested into getting out of life through work. Oftentimes, we get that treasure by means of work. It may not be money, it may not be the paycheck, but that paycheck is a means to that treasure. Maybe it's that person you care for. Maybe it's wanting to leave your home to be secure on your own way. Maybe it is lasagna, the best lasagna in Klang Valley, and for that you need R1 million. You know, to start a cafe, you need R1 million. But either way, the work that you do indicates where you're heading towards. Now, I tell you, this is a very important fact. Through the sheer size of the commitment and through what it points to, this is very important. Because the average person in an industrialized country like ours will work, do you want to guess? How long do you think, how many hours do you think you will spend and you've already started spending in the rest of your lives, for your whole lives, on working to get what you want? Any takers? Anyone? Just shout out a number. 40,000 hours? You mean like 40,000 hours? 40 hours a week? Yeah, actually, I use that. But of course, we Malaysians, we don't work 40 hours, okay? The jam already is 2 hours. Talking to your boss and then having to calm down next to the water cooler and taking a walk around KLCC Park is another 2 hours, okay? And then talking to your colleagues and like, hee-hee-ha-ha, them, that's another 2 hours. Anyway, I still went for a conservative approach around for the 45, 50 hours, okay? The answer is if you work for 40 years, it's 100,000 hours. 40 to 50 years, it's 100,000 hours. Some of you are like, no way, I hardly even put that much time into myself. You will put 100,000 hours into work before you die. 100,000 hours in perspective, you would think about it, tonight, you've already put 2 hours in to get it. By the time I'm finished, it'll be 3 hours. 2 to 3 hours out of 100,000 hours is like 3 little drops of saliva in an ocean of water. 100,000 hours is what you are already investing your life force into. To put it further into perspective, Malcolm Gladwell, which I hope some of you have been familiar with, he's a guy who studies this kind of stuff. He says to master anything, to become Sifu, okay? Master Ukwe, 10,000 hours is all you need. Now, I used to think, 10,000 hours, my God, 10,000 hours? That means I've got to spend another 9,700. Oh, that's too much, man. But then I realized now from looking at this, heck, I've probably already done that. In fact, 10,000 hours to become a Sifu or something is nothing. Because according to what I've just done, if you put in 100,000 hours, that means you can spend 10,000 hours and you probably will be a pastry chef. 10,000 hours, pastry chef, one seafood thing done. And then maybe you want to always be a samurai warrior, right? Chop a watermelon in half a second. 10,000 hours, you still got 80,000 hours left to spare. So now you're a pastry chef who can cut it fast. Okay? And then another 10,000 hours. Maybe you always want to be a mountain biker. I have mountain bikes at home. I need to do a wheelie and a bunny hop. Every time I do it, I fall and I get a concussion or whatever. Okay, but I need to get it done. 10,000, not 9,999. Okay, but 10,000, you could do a wheelie, you could mountain bike, you could go fishing, you could be a samurai warrior. 5 different seafood specializations and you still have 5 left. That's in context how much time you're putting into one thing. Why are you working so hard in this life? When the average samurai warrior only puts in 1/10 of that. When the average multilingual, multilinguistic can play 5 different instruments and be a samurai warrior dude can only put in 60,000 hours, let's say. You're putting 100,000 hours, 120,000, 130,000 hours. If you didn't think already that you were committed to something very, very powerful in your life, think again. Maybe you've never calculated it. My job is to raise up these uncomfortable truths. That's how much you're living for whatever this thing is that you're hoping will happen in your life. Now, we have in Malaysia the example, a supreme example of one man who's lived like this, whose whole life is dedicated to this. This one man, if you're anything like him at all, your investment into the thing that you love, you worship, you serve, you care for will be even more than 100,000 hours. Just last week, though, this man was probably the saddest man in Malaysia, I think. Don't quote me on this, but from what I saw happen, he said, you know, my baby has died. Okay, y'all don't recognize this, but this is a proton. This is the reason why anyway he's in trouble or he was in trouble. This is our national car, okay? Please understand, it's not the Perodua Myvi, okay? I know that outsells these cars like kacang putih, but I mean, that is the problem. Your generation doesn't know this car. I mean, when it first came out anyway, it was already a problem. But Mahathir put all his life into this car. When it came out, people were all saying, wait a minute, isn't this a Mitsubishi? Why is there a crescent moon on it? And wait, isn't this what they were driving in Japan 8 years ago? That's part of what the problem was. But he had put his whole life into this. Now, he's really sad now because this baby is being sold to another man. This man owns Volvo. Okay, he's obviously very happy to buy us over. But what I'm saying for you is, like Mahathir, if you're not clear at 91, you might be devastated. You might celebrate your 91st birthday to see that you've spent all your life on something only to see it taken away. Now, you better be sure that that investment is worth it. You better be sure that Mr. Volvo, who used to build fridges, by the way, isn't just going to walk in and take it all away. You better be sure that what you're investing in actually is watertight and not full of holes. So first, do you know what your treasure is? It's not just a simple matter of identifying it like I've done with you. I've just said 100,000 hours. What are you going to put your time into? What's your checkbook spending its money? What's your bank account spending its money on? Do you see it going to one particular book or a certain lifestyle or hobby? It's not as simple as that. It's really, as Jesus said, where your heart is. You have to recognize that your heart is involved in it. Because that's the hardest bit, isn't it? It's easy to say, that's the treasure. The gold bars are there. That's the treasure. My debit account is going straight to that. But the question is, do you recognize that you're tied to it? That even though you grudgingly admit sometimes that you have to do it, or even though you sometimes complain about it, the truth is, your heart is there, that you're not this do things in moderation parent of yours who's like, you know, I makan bermasa, everything's balanced. I don't think do things in extreme, even religion. I don't overcommit one. I'm not like some extremist. But the question is, do you recognize that you actually have put your heart into something, someone, some things, some people? Whatever you are currently living your life for, it is everything to you. And you know, it will take everything from you. You have got to be pretty sure that it is worth giving your all to it. I am not your pastor, but this is my call, my job, my concern. And I'm not doing this for money. And whether or not you decide tonight to become a Christian, it doesn't ultimately make me feel better or not. I mean, I'll be happy for you. I'll be glad for you. But this is just the reality of it. You do have to be brutal with what your heart is already doing. Sometimes your heart will lead you to treasure something that you shouldn't treasure. We all know this, right? With love. We have girlfriends. Sorry, guys. But it's much easier with the girls on this one. The guys are like, what's going on? Why are you crying? Why is Janet crying with you in a room? But sometimes with our girlfriends, they fall in love. They love someone, something so much. And that when it starts hurting them, and it really is a terrible investment, it's like worse than a Proton Saga. The boy is a Proton Saga. But our friends can't see it. You know how when you treasure something, you can be completely blind. I mean, love is blind. But we often say, hey, I mean, it's love. It's all okay, right? Isn't that what the homosexual lobby has been saying for years? How can it be wrong if you love something? Well, cannibalism is something that Maoris love to do. In fact, it's a religious view. I mean, I've been watching, I love the Maoris, okay? They're from New Zealand. And one of the reasons why they have to eat people, they have to eat you, is because, A, you're their enemy, and if they kill you, they should eat you, because that's how they harness your spiritual energy. So cannibalism is part of their religious belief. So it's not just a love of these things, they love beating you, but it's also something theological, something tied to their culture. But if they came over to you and said, hey dude, I'm a bit short on the cannibalism hours, man. Malcolm Gladwell says, 10,000 hours is what I need to be a seafood or cannibalism. My father was calling him the other day. Of course, you know, he's a chief, you know, in my village. So he says that right now, my cannibalism hours is very low, 300 only. Can I eat you? Are you going to say like, oh, it's so good that you're passionate about something. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Here, man. Are you going to do that? Are you going to say that? Are you going to say, what's right for you is right. What's right for me is also right. But since you're bigger, I guess I have to submit to what's right for you, although it's not right for me, lah, which is still right. Lah. Are you going to say? Are you going to say that? That's what people are saying today, that's what love is. Love makes everything right. No, I say love is blind quite often. I say love actually treasures the wrong thing. I say love can kill people. I say love can kill you. I say like any girl who's seen a girlfriend trapped in a terrible relationship, we need to intervene sometimes. We need to help that person who is enslaved. We need to help you. You need to help see this yourself. If you had a girl who you're in a meeting with, and it's obviously important, and it's like a just normal time of the day anyway, 1 p.m. or whatever, and then her boyfriend rings up, and she's like, honey, oh, no, I didn't, I'm sorry. No, I don't get angry. No, please, dear, honey bunny, no, please, honey pie. And then she leaves, and you're like, what the hell is going on? Next week she turns up, she's got a bruise on her face. You think that's okay? You think it's okay when you talk to her and she says with tears in her eyes, but I love him. You know, I've never met anyone like him. Yeah. You'd be like, girl, what is wrong with you? You don't live for this guy. Wake up. Are you a slave? We live in an age where we automatically assume as long as we love it, it's right. If I love Buddhism, it's right. If I love Hinduism, it's right. If I love eating people, it's right. Society claims this is true for so many things. As if, oh, everything's just like a brand. I prefer LV. You prefer VL. I prefer Panasonic. You prefer Pansonic. I mean, just saying it makes me like, ugh. That's so not true. We're not consistent at all. You never treat it that way. Everybody here knows an LV is an LV. Okay, a Sony is not a Sonus or Sonys or something like that that came out from some Chinese factory. I mean, we show it all the time. This is why dear old Mahathir is in trouble, because Chinese people would rather pay more money for another car than a car that's cheaper. To say everyone has a choice and their choice is always the right choice is a nonsense that we ourselves contradict. We ourselves say that's not true. That's a wrong choice. If your parents gave you enough money to buy a Honda, he would not want you to come back with a Proton. Say, what's wrong with you? Every single Chinese person on the street buys Honda. Why are you going to buy Proton? Every year Proton tries to sell. Cannot sell also. It's going bankrupt. You go buy a Proton. What's wrong? People think you got no money. Papa got no money. Go and send it back. Malaysian consumers say that to love this car does not make sense. You know that you have choices you make in consumer goods all the time that says choices, they can be right or they can be wrong. In fact, even the majority race chooses to drive a Honda. So even car buyers know that in life there are right and wrong choices. Just because you treasure something, it doesn't mean that it's right. Even your gut tells you that you need to do this. Your gut isn't right if it's wrong. In other words, what Jesus said, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. That's pretty serious stuff. Because if you put your heart on something, you better make sure it's the right choice. Jesus, in fact, is not saying to you, hey, you know what? I just want to teach you my lesson for today, guys. Okay? As the teacher of the world, the light of the universe, I just want to say, you know what? Whatever you do, be passionate, okay? Sounds like a school teacher's. Whatever you do, just be passionate. It'll be all right. Teacher, I like cannibalism. Okay. Thank God those talks I got, they don't work anymore. All right? The kids in my daughter's school, they're pretty sharp. One kid put up their hands during a class, which had nothing to do with it. He was just asking. It was related in a like kind of peripheral. He said, why can't we have sex with animals? Good question. I'm passionate about donkeys. Why can't I have sex with donkeys? Why not? See, previous generations never thought about this. They just thought, whatever you love is right. That's complete nonsense. You watch American TV today, you're going to find so much of this thinking. But here we have the opposite problem. We have a veneer of not thinking about these things, of just accepting, yalla, whatever Islam says is right, it's just right law. Yeah. But secretly on us by ourselves, we question these things. You might as well bring them up into the open tonight. You might as well ask, what actually is good for me? What actually is what God wants? What am I actually putting my heart on? Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. It's not a mandate for just being passionate about life, about anything. Jesus is actually saying to you, teaching you, to recognize what you worship. And be sure, that's the context of this Bible passage, be sure that what you worship is actually the right thing or person. So you see, some of you, you often say to me, and I think your generation's still the same, you often say to your friends who are sitting with you on the table now, I'm a free thinker. But are you actually free? When you actually do live for something, you're driven by something, you wake up for that something every day. You see, we make the mistake of thinking that just because we don't do this anymore, that we no longer worship something, that we are no longer religious. Your generation especially thinks that. Even when you do go with grandma to the temple, it's, you don't actually believe in a lot of that, do you? I mean, when I drive past the temple on our street, I still see businessmen early in the morning before they start their, you know, carit rezeki. They still go, right? Obviously, that's a big concern for them. I don't see you, though. I don't see you there before exams. Oh, 1 hour, I better go and pray taupe kong first. I don't see you doing that. You only go because your grandma wants you to. But just because we don't do this anymore, it doesn't mean we have stopped being religious or being worshippers of something, or being devoted to something. We just look like this now, right? This is our modern version of it, okay? What's like that, this is like that. Okay, same thing. You're sacrificing your body. You're cramming yourself into public transport. Okay, like, this doesn't work in Sunway because BRT is mostly empty. Wait, just wait, man. 10 years' time, you'll all be like, oh, BRT is where my sacrifice comes in. Okay? Okay, KTM. Okay, KTM maybe. You're like, what's KTM? Okay, moving on. 7 of you in my V. Ah, okay? It's like, move aside, dude. Your buttocks are too big. Okay, sure. Yeah, that's what you're sacrificing, right? Every day you make that pilgrimage to that temple called Sunway University, Monash University. You bow down to the high priest, Dean. Please accept my sacrifice. It's a D. No! Okay. You drink that holy ointment. Ah, flat white. Okay? This is you worshiping in your modern times. You still live for what you love. Maybe you hate it. It's like a love-hate thing, but you're still worshiping. You're still devoted to it. You may not know this, but before God, there's no lack of clarity. He knows exactly what you have been living for, particularly because the definition of right worship centers around Him and His Son and His temple. You don't live for Him, He merely knows it. Now Jesus, therefore, in this Bible passage, is contrasting between the one who knows that his treasure should consist of what God values and the one who is simply living this life seeking for what they've always wanted, for what human beings ever since we rebelled against God have always wanted, which is whatever fixes our worries, our needs, our happiness, our prestige, our power, our security. He says, do not seek, he says. He's contrasting it. Do not seek what you are to eat, what you are to drink, nor be worried. Okay, maybe you're someone who like, I hardly eat and drink. Fine, then the worried part is for you. For all the nations of the world seek after these things. Everybody does this. And your Father actually knows that you need them. He's not a bad God. Do you see oil palm production failing? Do you see soybeans not planting properly? Do you see the soil being like Mars? Did He put you in Mars? Do you suddenly appear in like, God, what am I supposed to do? Die. Does He say that? I can't breathe, God. Need more oxygen. Yeah, who cares, man? I don't need oxygen. Does He do that? No. You have a planet that if you travel a trillion light years, a light year, speed of light 1 year, you travel a trillion light years, still cannot find this kind of planet. You are not an accident in the universe. You think God doesn't know that you need these things? Instead, He says, Jesus says, seek His kingdom, God's kingdom. It already is His planet anyway. But to seek His kingdom is to come under Him, His rule, to acknowledge that He is God. And these things will be added to you. Fear not, He says, little flock. He's speaking here to His future church, to His people gathered under Him. These things will be added to you. It is your Father's good pleasure to give you this kingdom. And so, you see, we'll start to unpack this. Don't worry if you're finding it hard to understand this point. But in this sentence, 33, if you're not living for these things, then you're not actually beholden to them. You're not actually tied to them. It's like saying to Janet, this guy is bad for you. I'm okay, one. I can handle it. He really does love me. I love him a lot. Well, prove it then. How about you guys take a break from each other for 6 months? No, see? You say you can handle it. You say you can let go of it. How come you can't let go of it? Sell your possessions. Give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old. Instead of living for that thing, not only let it go, reject it, turn it around, and actually give and actually then secure for yourself what God really cares for, what He values, not what you value. Then you're actually part of this kingdom. And actually then you'll have security because where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Jesus is not saying don't have any treasure. Jesus is saying, what is your treasure? Is it the right treasure? Now, I'm not going to be seeing you for a long time. This is our last get it. Some of you are just get it aficionados, right? You're still going, where's the skit? Dudes, Kim can't do 5-10 skits a year. Next year she has to do 12 skits.
she's dying here.
Next year, we're going to try to do more, okay? I'm going to publicly say, next year, we're doing this wonderful book called Hebrews, okay? No cafe jokes please. What I'm going to do with Hebrews is I'm going to try my best to actually put up maybe one a month, okay? You like it? Okay, well, forget about it then, once every year. Okay, anyway, we're going to try to do more next year, but this round, this year, this is it. I might see you, wait, what? I do hope that you actually come along on Sundays, keep learning about this stuff. It is a little bit harder on Sundays, but if I don't see you again, and even if I do see you, this is your last get it. I mean, what's the whole point of this whole thing? To not get it? What do you do to get it? Not get it. What? Inbuilt in the brand, dudes. Who's here studies marketing? Inbuilt into the name, into the product is getting it. Are you getting it? Thank you for the encouragement. This is our last get it, so you should take stock. It's Sunday night. Monday is a new week. Take stock of what you are actually seeking, living for, worshiping on a daily basis, which is accumulating to 100,000 hours. Think matter. Still, some of you will say, Pastor, very enthusiastic, huh? But actually, I'm a neutral observer. No, really, I got nothing against Christians. And I think it got me a little bit confused. It's not like I don't care, but also not like I care. You understand? I get what you're saying, lah, Pastor. This is how you often talk to me, right? I really am neutral, Pastor. I'm like, what I mean by free thinker is I really don't take sides, lah. Everything is okay, lah. There's a limit, I know, right? The cannibalism one, or go on. But still, I came here today just to visit, lah, okay? I think Christians are good, they're passionate. My friend here is why I'm here, lah. But this is not for me, lah. Listen, Jesus, the teacher of Christianity, says in this passage, no one is a free thinker. The fact that you think that you are a free thinker is not only saying Jesus is a liar, the teacher of the universe, the Son of God is a liar, he doesn't know what he's talking about. It's also making a fool of yourself. You know that you are committed to your life, to the things that you seek, that give you satisfaction. Sentence 29, what you eat and drink. You really going to tell me, no la, I don't care about these things on a... You know you're committed to your security, that you do worry. Don't tell me you don't worry. You worry la. I'm sure you worry la. That's why you work the way you do, or that's why you like act like you don't care. My daughter's always going on about these guys in school who never study. But I just found out Bill Gates, yeah, these guys, always doing well in class, top class, never study. But I found out Bill Gates purposely didn't study for all the semester until the last 2 weeks. Quietly, he just ran away and studied like mad, then beat everyone. Why? Because he's worried about looking worried. So even not looking worried is a worry. You're worried, everyone will think you're worried. So you're like, I'm not worried. In fact, after that, 2 weeks before, you're like, I'm going to study like mad. So I'm going to show you that without being worried, I wasn't worried. I still did well without being worried. Yeah, I'm not worried. You liar, you were worried all the way. In fact, you were more worried than if you had just studied steadily. You could have even blessed everybody else by studying together. Hey, can I share my brains with you? Because I see you need help. No, it's like, I'm not worried. I don't need to study. Haha, loser, you study, you worried. I'm not worried. But in the end, we all worry. All the nations of the world worry. Sentence 30, everybody worries. Look at Jesus. He's not just teaching some parochial little doctrine to like 12 dudes, setting up his own little ashram. He is the universal king, messiah, teacher, light of the world. He's saying the whole world, he's making a full statement here as God. He's saying nobody is free thinking. You're actually set in your ways. You're almost robotic. People often say Christians are robotic, but actually no. You want to be free, you need to know the truth. Christians know the truth. But you are living your life the same way. I mean, in my time, not that many blondes, but in my time, dyeing your hair started to come in. That's how old I am. It was not normal to have a Chinese, Asian dude, Korean, Japanese, to start to dye your hair. But you know what? All my Hong Kong friends had dyed hair. They all would look different, so they all look the same. Now, without me doing anything, I look different. Ha ha! All the nations of the world are already in set ways. They just follow trend after trend, worrying about themselves. I mean, you have an LV, I have an LV. My LV is bigger than your LV. Oh no, you bought a new LV? Oh no, I have to work harder now. Do you see? You already live like this. You already worship in your life like this. No one is actually irreligious. You may not go to a temple, you may not have a priesthood, but you actually do have a religion. It's a religion maybe of yourself, and you're not actually free. In fact, I want to tell you that a Christian is really quite unique. We're all still learners. We're all still working at it. But what Jesus is teaching us in church is that when you learn about Him, you actually do become free. You actually worry more about God. And in worrying about God and what He worries about, you become free. You become free to be what you actually are. You become devoted to what He is and what He wants, which means your worries now are godly. Which means although you may actually face suffering and difficulty in life, you actually now have a clear purpose for why those sufferings happen. You're not just looking for the light at the end of a tunnel. That darkness is the light. Now, that may be a little bit too profound for you. That's one of the reasons why you got to read the Bible more and come to church. But you see, when you are saying again and again, I'm free, I'm neutral, I'm not worried, you are worried, you are set, you are robotic, you're tied up. The Christian whom you make fun of, he's the one, she's the one, who actually is free. That's why they keep loving you, I hope. That's why they keep loving you, even though you make fun of them. So you may think you're neutral, but actually you worry you are as devoted as any devotee on a pilgrimage, whatever you, or whoever your God is. A Christian, on the other hand, is someone who is devoted, who does have worries, but is devoted to the right thing. Now you can tell how Jesus is of this view from this text, from this Bible passage, because you can see that there is a right thing He wants you to give your all to, and then there is a wrong thing that He wants you to stop being devoted to. He wants you to cancel that out, reject that, and He wants you to actually devote yourself to something different. Because you can see there in sentence 29, He says, stop, do not. He doesn't say, try not to. He doesn't say, hey, you know, being a Christian is like a journey where you just try something for a difference. Just try something new. You know, maybe as a result, you'll change, maybe not. He doesn't say, oh, Christianity is just like other religions where you're on a journey, on a pilgrimage. You try harder, you become a bodhisattva slowly. No, He says, stop. He says, don't do it. He doesn't say, just go out in cycle after cycle of slight improvement. He says, this is a clear choice, a clear devotion. Either you are worshiping God or not. Because you see, already when He confronts us, He knows we already worship what is in this world and we turn our eyes away from heaven. We like to think we're on a journey. We like to think we're mostly neutral. We're free thinking. We're making progress. Sometimes not, sometimes yes. But for Him, it is either you are worshiping the right thing and that's why you behave how you behave, or you're worshiping the wrong thing, which is why you live the way you live. In other words, Jesus is not saying to you, and get it, have you considered Christianity? No, He's saying to you, stop living the way you've been living. Stop, in fact, being, as He says in this passage, I hope you can see that, stop, in fact, being like every other human being. The message is so much bigger. The message is not one of self-fulfillment and progress and self-actualization. The message is saying, you cannot be just like everybody else. Christianity is a total transformation. What you're really doing in life as you forage around, whether 1,000 years ago in a bush looking for food around you, or whether you're sitting in front of your laptop tapping away, working till late nights, looking around you at your colleagues trying to be one up on them, what you're doing in all this in your career advancement, it's no different from what you're doing 1,000 years before with your ancestors. You are merely worshiping yourself, serving the things that you want. You are not worshiping by looking up, He says. You are worshiping by looking down. Jesus is telling you, That's what you already do, and you must give it up today. In Sentence 31, he says, you must seek God's kingdom. Do not live like this anymore. It's got to stop. Seek God's kingdom. Sentence 31. The key here is to worship by looking upward, to know God. All right, you recognize now that you already are a devotee, a worshiper. You are as religious as they come, as your ancestors were. Maybe you don't bow down, but in fact, you do actually worship in your own way in this life. And the key here, therefore, is to worship God, not yourself, not the things that you want. Notice how God here in this passage is called your Father. You see, the reason why you are looking downwards in your worship as opposed to what actually human beings should be designed for, I mean, just to look upwards for worship, the reason why you do this is because in your pursuit of wealth and happiness, you actually don't acknowledge God. You don't recognize Him as Father, as the one who created the world in which the good things include wealth and happiness. You have, in fact, suppressed this truth. Remember this? I talked about it in Get It 1 and 2. I mean, some of you weren't here. But you're not living according to the reality that God is actually God and the Father of this world, that He is the King of this world that you live in. That you are in His kingdom, that He is your Father, not your Father. I mean, that will upset your dads, right? But this is the truth of it. That as you live for your dad and what he wants, and then as your children live for you and what you want as a dad, as a mom, you're just all worshiping your own self-made religion. I'm part of a family that has done that for years. I mean, we don't believe in God at all. We might go to temple once in a while, but actually, in all that movement, we're just taking care of ourselves. We're seeking what the Gans have always sought for, stability, prosperity. In fact, my dad made it pretty clear to me one day. He didn't have any problems with me being a Christian, okay, quote unquote, any problems. He said, you know, Christianity, everybody needs some religion. No religion, got problems one. So go, but not too extreme. And then what that meant, that not too extreme, came out one day clearly when I said, Dad, I want to be in ministry. And he said, listen, either you choose God or you choose me. Do you understand what my dad was doing? He was essentially saying, you should worship me, your dad. God is not worthy of all your worship. I am your Father. Who is God? Exactly, Dad. Exactly. This is the question. Who is God? So long as we do not see God as our Father, so long as we do not worship Him and we continue to worship the things that we worship, the security we desire, our family, we'll keep living this way. But Jesus said, do not. In fact, Jesus shows us that if you had your eyes on what God values, see that? Treasure in the heavens, then you wouldn't be living for these things that you're currently working so hard for. You'd actually be able to sell these possessions. But instead, right now, you're living for these possessions. You're living for things. Ultimately, you can't live a life of love, taking care of people that God has created to be inhabiting this world for each other, to build wonderfully healthy societies, because you don't actually acknowledge God. You think the problem is just loving each other? You think Black Eyed Peas is right? Where is the love? No, the question is, where's the Father? Where is God? When we ignore God, there is no love possible. Even finding and looking for love in human society itself is false worship. You think those bankers who caused the subprime crisis, you know, do you know the subprime crisis? I'm going to run away right now if you don't. Anyway, in the banking industry, right, documentaries have just shown this to be true. After the subprime crisis, which America caused, you know, the whole world to crash because of this, it turns out the banks were giving out loans that were of very poor quality to people who couldn't actually qualify. And then they were buying insurance against it failing. That means they knew it was going to fail, and so they made money in two ways. These are bankers who studied ethics in Harvard, in Stanford. You get it? What the banking industry needs, what you need, what society needs, what human civilization needs, is not simply a better ethics course in Harvard. not simply better ways to seek the things that we want. What we need is the Father. So much is this a reality of how life must be that God will actually reward us for the life that we live according to His design and not for the kind of life where you live for whatever you want. There is a judgment against what we're doing, which is wrong. Jesus says, do not, because it has consequences. You see, the life that you're living right now for yourself, your worries, your needs, as justifiable as you think they are, as much as you treasure it with your heart, it is actually false worship. God will not reward that. But the life that Jesus defines, which ended up for Him on the cross, suffering, which for many Christians will mean a lot less money. I mean, every time I drive around and I don't double park, I tell my wife, you see what it looks like to be a Christian? Everyone else is double parking. Park, well, half an hour only. Bad, bad. Make life inconvenient for everybody else, but you know, just double park only. Yeah. But as a Christian, I don't double park. It takes me more money, more time, more petrol. And there's only a very trite example of what your life will be like as a Christian. That life is a life that God rewards. I'm not trying to just sell you some scheme where you buy into it and then you realize later how painful it's going to be. I'm telling you now, Christian life is often painful, but that actually is a new kind of joy. That actually is a life of true worship. If you have been living your life without God, without His Son as your rulers, no wonder you're just doing whatever you think is best for you. No wonder you're not loving people the way you need to. And by definition, therefore, you are not a true worshiper of God. So you see, the Christian message is very simple. It's a very uncomplicated, factual one. You are either a true worshiper of God or you're a false one. There is no in-between. Don't get upset with your friend tonight if he says to you, so I guess you're a false worshiper, right? Don't go like, no, leh, I'm true, false, true, like getting there, lah. No, you're either a false worshiper or a true one. Jesus makes the case pretty clearly, in fact, that we are all engaged in false worship as we live this life. All of us do this. And in Get It One, we looked at it, right, together. We looked at the laws. They paint a pretty clear picture of us. The laws which embody the character of God and what He intends for His good, lawful society. The character of the world He's made. We fail to do this. But not only do we fail, but we actually deny it even as we teach it. We deny it by not being consistent with it, even as we teach our children about it. We see as our failure in terms of how we don't love the people we should love. We are stingy, we hoard it. We say that we are making money for our family. It's hard to prove this point to you, but in 30 years' time, when you finally make that pile for your family that you said was always for them, let's see. My personal experience in this is going to be hard for you. You're going to have to really examine what your treasure is. If God says, listen to Jesus' teaching on how humans are designed to live in this world, and you want to live your own life, that's false worship. Ultimately, that is the best litmus test. Maybe 1,000 hours isn't so clear to you of work. Maybe generosity is not so clear to you. But the foolproof test is, are you living according to what God has said we should be doing in His Son? That's the test. And there are so many more tests which you could see for yourself. But we are all worshiping the wrong thing. And therefore, we are in the wrong. No matter how people have twisted Jesus' reputation to say, you know, essentially Jesus is a message of peace and love and kindness, we have to see here that Jesus actually is a message of authority. That Jesus is everything to God and demands everything from you. He's saying how you are living your life right now for everything, that is not the kind of life that says God is everything. This year, in fact, at church, as a Protestant church, we're celebrating a great thinker, a great Christian, who wasn't always Christian. He was Roman Catholic for a long time and he wasn't Christian. But he realized his whole life he had been living with false worship. So you see, you can be in church, and like this guy, whose name is Martin Luther, you can actually be a false worshiper in church. Maybe you even know some Christians like that. And I apologize for it. Maybe you're thinking, I can kind of feel like that guy's not sincere, not genuine about God. So he goes to church, he invites me, I don't want to go. Well, I'm sorry about that. But the big question you have to face tonight is, are you a false worshiper? Christians may be terrible. Churchgoers may be terrible. Sorry, not Christians, but churchgoers may be terrible. Martin Luther was terrible. I'm terrible. But the question tonight is, have you recognized what Martin Luther has said, which is that we all worship something. The question is, are you getting it right? And if you don't, it's really dangerous to get what you worship wrong. You all are worshipers. What you worship wrongly is very dangerous. You're all false worshipers, so you're all in danger. If you remember from the first Get It, I pointed out that you are really designed to live for God. In fact, part of the reality of you being designed for God, by God, is the fact that you do worship the wrong things. Do you realize that? Martin Luther was very clear, very smart, very sharp. A dolphin does not worship the tuna he eats. Chimpanzees do whatever they want. But you have a natural, innate desire to serve, to worship, to put your whole life into that lasagna. And that's what you're doing. You claim to be neutral, but the 100,000 hours in your life say something different, that you have a God or gods, your heart is there, and so therefore, your whole life is in danger. It's not something that you can get out of. Drug addiction is easier to get out of than this. False worship is worse than drug addiction. Now, I'm saying to you this knowing how terrible drug addiction is, but do you understand? This is not something that you can't even deny. You're not even going to pretend like when someone says, hey, you need intervention, you're not even going to pretend like, I know, but I can handle it. You're not even going to do that. You're just going to say, no, I'm okay. It is so dangerous what you're doing to yourself right now. When I was a boy, my mother let me go to an air show. I'm a bit of a baobela, I think. I don't know, I'm guessing. That's what my sisters say. And so me going alone with this other person was a big thing. So the condition was, and my father didn't always know. My father found out, I think we were in trouble, the whole family. So how can you let the little boy, because I'm only in kindergarten, right? I'm only like maybe 5, I think, 3, 4. So the condition is my caregiver, who's taking me to this air show, he wanted to go, has got to make sure that I hold on to his hand at all times. So he's my safety net, right? Well, what happened was I was so caught up with the jet planes. I mean, I've never seen such fast-moving objects in the sky. And it's like, whoa. So all this time I'm holding on to it, holding on, holding on, holding on, holding on. My safety is still here. I can feel it. And then at some point, I'm like, that's so exciting. And so I started talking to my caregiver and realized, hey, wait a minute, you're not my caregiver. You know that moment where you realize you've been holding on to something for your safety net, and then it turns out that person's not your safety net, that thing's not your safety net. If I hadn't noticed that, I would have been led away. I'd be the youngest kidnapping victim in the state of Malacca at the time. Thankfully, my caregiver was nearby laughing at me, just holding on the wrong thing, horrible person, was just going... My mother was wrong to trust me, this guy. You might not have realized it, you see, but tonight, you are very well holding on confidently, assuredly, to what is dangerous for you. Do not make the mistake of hanging on to what is everything to you, but is actually everything that is wrong for you. Do not trust in something that's full of holes. Imagine if you were out in the desert, it was a survival situation, and you needed water, obviously, and some friend of yours needed help. So now you go out there to save him with a bottle of water, and that water bottle had a hole in it. By the time you get there, both of you are dead because that had a hole in it. Jesus says, provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old. It's such simple advice, but are you taking it? Is your money bag something like the bus driver I read about this week, who put 33,000 of his savings, all his life, you know, can't understand, bus driver, into an insurance scheme or some investment scheme, all gone. It's been hitting the news regularly, right? All these different schemes, Malaysians desperate now because of the economy. But imagine that. Imagine not taking this advice, which is just so sensible, so logical, so factual. Do not put your money into money bags that actually grow old. Go and get a watertight container called heaven. Make sure the treasure is heavenly treasure. A fixed deposit, if you want to put it that way, that God says, that's my treasure. Is the treasure where you put your heart every day and you are planning to before tonight, is that treasure something God has said to you? That's my treasure. I just love LV bags. If you come to heaven with one of those things, I'll let you in straight away. Is that girl, that guy, that job, something God will look at you and say, you know what, I just love lawyers. I don't care what kind of lawyer you are. I'm so glad you became a lawyer. That's the most important thing to me, that you're a lawyer. Rubbish collectors, what do they do? Except to keep the place clean. No, we know that when it comes to God's treasure, we can tell easily the way he related to this man, the way this man himself came from God's side, this Jesus, he is everything to God. And that is why we keep recommending him to you. Yet it's all about Jesus. There is, and therefore, an urgency tonight to you recognizing that this Jesus is the whole treasure of God. And that what you worship is wrong because you are not worshiping Jesus. It's not that difficult. Jesus is so many things for you, but you are not worshiping him now or yet. You do not want to continue this. It's going to be terrible for you if you keep being in the dark when Jesus has already shown himself to be the light. In fact, Jesus is so much everything that to know him is to be with the person who will even make the hardest times in your life okay because you have the real treasure that God has. I mean, that's kind of what people say all the time, right? If you're passionate about something, it's never work. Well, guess what? In God's universe, he wants you to be passionate, devoted about worshiping his son. And it's not work. Christianity may be hard, but it's not work. Christianity will cause you to be tortured, but it's not work. It's life. It's being God's. It's treasuring what he treasures. It's being the son, the daughter of your father. It's belonging to this family called Christ's family. Jesus is everything to God, which we can see from his power, his authority, his knowledge, his ministry, and his own relationship with God. And that's how we can be brought into true worship with God, through his own worship. Now, I'm not going to go through this carefully or slowly because I've already done that. If you're in the past, get it. I'm just going to run through it as a review. I'm going to do it as a challenge, though. You say that you know what you're worshiping? Well, let me challenge you. Do you know a person who has power effortlessly over the spiritual world? Do you worship that guy? Because that's what Jesus is. He casts out demons. And he doesn't just do it like some kind of bomo, trying his best. He doesn't go in front of a spirit, go like, and something like that, you know, some PR-only style thing. And it's like, ni ayam tak cukup. Then you go and cut another five chickens. He doesn't do any of that. Nothing. It's just completely effortless. Mark 1, 23-24, the demon, in fact, acknowledges him as the Holy One of God. This is a guy who's actually in control, that even though the demons don't worship him, they fear him. I mean, you guys, you're not even in that category. You pretend you're neutral, but you're actually against Jesus. The demons, they actually recognize at least, hey, we're not neutral about Jesus. He is fearsome. What do you want with us, Holy Man, Holy One of God? I'm unclean. You are the Lord. Please, tell me what you want. Kill me now. Send me away. The demons know better than you. Do you know a person who has full control over the natural world so that even his disciples were awed? I mean, they kind of knew that he was the Son of God, but when he actually did this stuff, they were like, what kind of kung fu is this? Especially when you start realizing the Old Testament has always shown us God to be the God of creation, the God whose power is over the natural world. Whatever the Lord pleases, one poem says. he does in heaven and on earth. He's got complete control over nuclear energy, over all the powers you see in this world. And when Christ came to the world, whoa, we see the same authority. He commanded the wind in one account in Mark 4, shut up, be still, stop, and it stopped. American Indian shamans, they take days of chanting, of days to make it happen, and it doesn't even happen sometimes. You want cloud cover to improve its lying over there's a drought? We have to hire a plane. We have to seed the clouds. You know they do that? I have a friend who did a PhD on that. But not only that, Jesus actually could make water molecules bind around his foot. I mean, that's the only way I can work it out. Not only could he control the barometric pressure of the Galilean Sea, which is amazing, that's a lot of square acreage to cover for water pressure, but he could also control, if he needed to walk to a boat to see his disciples, he could just walk out. And it wasn't like there was a whole permanent frozen lake there, so the next day when fishermen try to get a livelihood, it's like, whoa, what happened to the whole place? Why is it all concrete now? No, he could walk on water without sinking because he had complete control over molecules. He's got a molecular advantage over all of us. You don't think this guy is worth worshipping? This is not X-Men. My powers are limited too, so we have to work together with each other. You do the zapping, I do the stinging. Nothing like that. It's just, I don't understand. What's this limitation? I don't get it. You want it to lose, bind, nuclear, fission, fusion. I can do it all. Matthew 14:33, when the disciples saw him walk on water, they just blurted out, truly, you are the Son of God. One day, at a wedding, his mother needed him to perform a miracle. I think she's seen enough of him as a child, I suppose. He said, oh, what do you want me to do this for? So he just turned water into wine. Do you know how much work the molecules have to do to become wine? You try? Why? You got water? Yeah, go on, go on! You're definitely not worth worshipping. You didn't even start with a grape. You should squeeze a bit of grape in, lah. Jesus doesn't even need the grapes. Do you know someone who can banish disease? I'm not incredibly sick yet. I have some problems going on. But one thing I do suffer is migraines. And you know what? I have tried different stuff. Some of you even give me Chinese stuff, you know, all the time. But I cannot get headaches to leave me in an instant. But Jesus, with Peter's mummy, Luke 4:39, mum-in-law, he needs her to serve. He just rebukes the fever. Does your doctor ever go, naughty cancer? Doctor, wait, stop. I'm working here. Do you trust my authority or not? After this, I'm going to call you to worship me, okay? All right? Naughty fever. Naughty cancer. Out, 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 out. Nothing like that. Jesus goes, and then just the fever goes away. And obviously, the pinnacle of this is his resurrection of Lazarus. You know, Lazarus, there is a pastor in Singapore who said he could raise the dead. In my time, 15 years ago, he said that. He did not do it. It was a real embarrassment to Christianity. I wish pastors would stop saying stuff like this. Because the guy who could do it is Jesus, because he is God. He made sure that Lazarus decomposed. I talked about this at Resurrection Sunday. He made sure his friend decomposed. And then he didn't do some weird ritual where he's like, come, 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 or something like that. In just one word, one sentence, he just said, Lazarus, come out. I say that to my children and they don't do it. Yesterday, it just happened. Latima, Ilona, Ellie, come here. Come here! It still didn't work. No, really, Joy, they didn't listen to me. So I had to shout louder and still say, I'm not angry. It's just that you all don't follow my voice control unless it's like crazy stuff, okay? Clearly, you're trying to teach me a lesson. I'm not Jesus. Jesus has complete control. And very importantly tonight, you must understand for your own salvation, Jesus is completely in control of knowing God. This is a very profound point. I don't have time for it. But very importantly for your own true worship, you need to understand that you don't have complete control over that. Part of your pride, part of your self-worship is saying, as I seek for these things in this world, according to what I decide is important and priority in my life, I can work out for myself who God is. My friends invite me for Bible study, I'll come anytime I like. I open the Bible, I understand, sure can, I understand. I'm educated, ma. I'm a lawyer. But I'm telling you, knowing God is not a simple matter of just opening the Bible. God reveals himself. And the only one who has ever revealed God fully, the only one who knows God and the only one through whom we can know God is not Muhammad, not Buddha, not you, not the Pope, not me, and not even just Scripture. It is Jesus. The Scripture has power and authority because it is teaching us about Jesus. Jesus has given us his understanding of who he is in the Scripture. And so very importantly about Jesus is that he knew God perfectly. We know God impartially, imperfectly, especially since we are what the Bible calls sinful. And so our own minds are often corrupted. But if you go to God through Jesus, then you do know him. He tells his disciples, in fact, you have now seen the Father because you have seen and known me. If it weren't true, Jesus is blasphemous. We should kill Jesus. And that's, by the way, why they tried to kill him and why they did. But he resurrected. Because he really did reveal God. No one but Jesus knows the Father immediately, completely, and perfectly. All things, he says in Matthew 11, have been handed over to me by my Father. And so no one knows the Son except the Father. You see, you can't even know Jesus without the Father himself revealing him to you. You don't think that if you had Jesus today, yeah, I just believe him and I see him. Hello, even if you see him, you won't necessarily believe him. This is together and part of God's sovereign control. And so to know the Father is through the Son, and to know the Son is through the Father. Both are a huge privilege. No one knows the Son except the Father. No one knows the Father except the Son, and anyone to whom the Son chooses to reveal him. Jesus knew God. And I know you don't like people who are know-it-alls, but in this case, it is the best thing in life that Jesus knows God perfectly and also knows everything, including you. The Bible tells us that his interactions with people, he knows people thoroughly. And that's the reason why we should trust him. You want friends like that, right? It's counterintuitive, I know. You want friends who don't know you, who just think you're handsome, who think you're beautiful, who think you're perfect, who lie to you all the time. Do I look good? Fantastic. They don't know you. They can't even see clearly. But do you want friends like that? Or do you want friends who can tell you, dude, you got to change your shirt. Dude, you really got to get a haircut. Dude, you're too fat. How dare you? But you are fat, seriously. Okay, too fat. Or dude, you're too thin. Dude, I think you need to eat more. Dude, I think you're a slob. Dude, I think you cannot get a wife. Don't you want someone who's going to tell you the truth about you, who's going to know you, and is going to know his subject matter? Jesus is someone who knows the key subject matter, God, and knows you at the same time, who knows you thoroughly. John actually says, John 2:24, he says that Jesus did not entrust himself to man because he doesn't need anyone to witness about him. He is self-authenticating. He is from God. At the same time, he doesn't trust us because he knows what's in us. You see, you don't want a king, a savior, a leader, one that you should worship, who is just like you, who is as corrupt as you. You want someone who's higher, different, better, clearer, who call out your shit when you're doing it, who will actually say to you, hey, look, face up to what you actually are. I know that the Klang Valley Christianity we often hear about presents a completely different Jesus. A Jesus who's more insipid, more like gentle, more like just more like a fluffy toy. But you don't want a soft toy for God. You want this Jesus. Very importantly, it is his love for God that we need to benefit from, that we can benefit from. This love for God, this worship of God shows us that he truly understands what it is to be human, what it is to be truly the Son of God. All those things he taught you just now in that passage about how to live this life under God in the kingdom, it'd be terrible if he himself didn't do it. But all his knowledge and all his understanding of man is captured in the fact that he actually lives out this life perfectly. As this perfect Son of God, he never lies. His character is perfect. He is godly. He is compassionate. He has this power, this incredible power, and yet he does not use it to abuse us, to abuse ourselves, to abuse other people, to test the limits. He continues to be the kind of human being that God treasures. And so in Jesus' worship, is our worship. The Christianity that you need to understand from the Bible shows that the suffering and weakness of Jesus, which belong to his worship of God, is actually his power, his sovereign control. He says in John 10, "No one takes life from me, but I lay it down on my own accord." You see the power in the suffering? He freely chooses to join the Father's design for suffering for our good, for God's glory. You see, our worship of God is tied up in his true worship. Jesus shows how he is of God in suffering. We don't see that in our lives. When we have religion, we try to use God. When God shows what true religion is in Jesus, it shows an obedient servant who loves God. And that's why we see the heart of it is in the cross. The cross is not just some random event. The cross is the revealing of God's glory. John actually explains this. But firstly, we see that this is God's control, that he is willingly putting his own son up for a sacrifice. We have the prophet Isaiah 53 talking about this. It was the will of the Lord to crush him. And then Acts 2:23, the apostles preach about this and show that this is actually fulfillment of the scriptures, that he was delivered up according to the plan and foreknowledge of God. So this definitely wasn't a random event. This was part and parcel of Jesus suffering as an obedient, worshiping servant of God. This is exactly what he chose as part of his control and his worship. He was obedient to the point of death, even on a cross. So Jesus, this suffering servant, established, therefore, on a cross, true worship for all of us. He did this by being the everything that we couldn't be to God. He did what only the Christ could do. He did it all. He was our substitute. The Son of Man came, Mark 10:45 says, to give his life as a ransom for many. And why did he do this? He suffered to bring us to God. Our true worship today is only possible because of Jesus, the true worshiper. And so we must see that the whole end point of Christianity is not self. If you came into Christianity tonight because you wanted to benefit yourself, that would be a terrible bastardization of what we're saying here tonight. That would be a terrible misunderstanding, a corruption. That would be a failure to understand that true worship actually is found, seen, exemplified in Jesus. In other words, Christ is the true worship, because Christ is everything God wants for humanity. We are rightly obsessed and devoted to learning about Christ. This church is Christ-centered and therefore God-glorifying. In other words, Christ establishes for us true worship of God in his own worship of God. Put your whole life into him. This is what faith is about. Faith is not just you believing in something, thinking something, accepting something. Faith is realizing the whole center of life is Christ. Faith is holding on to what in fact is worth holding on to. Faith is being tied to the very thing that actually is the center of all of life, Jesus himself. Because he is everything to God. And so he can be everything to us. And he should be tonight. Why are you delaying this? Why are you even letting this go on? Jesus makes it pretty plain and simple. I am the way, the truth, and the life. He even says that he is both the bread of life as well as the water of life. I mean, he says he's both food and drink, because Jesus is everything. And so tonight, whatever you've eaten, whatever your hopes are for tomorrow, whatever your concerns are, relationships, money, etc., if you don't have this, you have nothing. Because knowing Jesus is knowing everything that you need to know about yourself and God. Do you know Jesus? I started tonight by saying, what is your treasure? But I can also end this and ask the same question again by saying, if your treasure is not Jesus, then whatever you're treasuring right now is false worship. Whatever you are treasuring right now is going to lead you to judgment. And so you must choose. In the last words of Jesus' ministry on earth, before he went to rule in heaven and send his Spirit to us to continue what he did, his words were, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." This everything that Jesus is has a very real application into our lives. The very same control and power which leads him to suffer for his people is the very same control and power that one day will be expressed in judging each and every one of you. And I can tell you right now what that verdict is going to be. Because if you do not change, if you do not choose Jesus right now, if you do not recognize him as everything, you will be judged as the one who denied Jesus. Either he is everything, or you have rejected everything he is. You get this? He is not neutral, just as you are not neutral. Just as the things that you live for are not neutral. You are already living your whole life for some very, you seem to think, important things which will not lead you to this eternal life. So you should catch up to reality and you should change your mind on this and you should repent. I'm not trying to sell you something which just is like attractive to your natural selves. Sometimes Christianity is presented that way. And I think Christianity is very attractive. But the way you are right now with your false worship, you are not going to see this as naturally attractive. Why would you? What God has to do for you, which I hope he's already doing right now, is to show you how wrong you are in your false worship. It's to convict you that you are what the Bible calls sinful, that you are trapped in loving the things which you were not designed to live for. Do you really think your whole life is about a bag or bags or a girl or girls or guys or cars or things? Do you really think you can be buried those things? No. You're not a chimpanzee. You're not an animal. You were designed for God. And in those things, then, the other things can be added onto you. I already know that you are judged, and so was I. So why not tonight ask God for this transformation? Pray with me now, and if you pray, you are exercising faith. It's not a special magical formula. It's simply recognizing Jesus to be everything. And as you listen to this prayer, you'll know that that's exactly what true worship is. And as you do that, and you're sincere about it, and you're committing to it, then you will emerge from that prayer, even as you do it, as a Christian. Join me. Father, I confess that in all my life, I've been living not for you. As much as I went to church, tried to be religious, tried to be moral, I was really denying you. Bottom line is, I didn't care about your son. I didn't treat him for who he is. I didn't care for his example. But I know now that true worship belongs to you and that I am a false worshiper. That the reason why I treat the things of this world the way I do, that the reason why I worry the way I do about my career, my studies, is really because I do not worship you. That I treasure what I treasure. Teach me now to be different. Thank you for opening my eyes to Christ, for showing me his true worship, and for exposing my own failure compared to him, for teaching me that I am sinful. I am a false worshiper. Thank you that Jesus died for me because he is this true worshiper of you. Thank you that because he lives for your glory, unlike me, he therefore could
take my place. Thank you for his obedience, his wonderful love for you, his worship for you. And I'm moved by how much he is, and therefore now how much he is to me. I want to be like him. I want to give my life to you like him. I know I can never attain that perfectly, but I know that in him I will know you, that through him I have come to know who you are, that because of him I can be brought to you, and I am speaking to you now, the God of this world, this universe, my Father. Hello, Dad. Thank you for teaching me these things. I'm going to have to struggle through many things in my life. I have to give up some addictions. I have to give up some things which I think I'm pretending I'm in control of, but actually I'm not. I have to change the way I treat my parents, my friends. I've stopped being so conscious of what society thinks and be more worshipful of you. I have to really get my act together as a Christian. So help me, Lord, by your Spirit. Change me as you've powerfully hit me in my head so I can see things clearly tonight. And please continue this wonderful work. And I give my life to you, all that it is, for what it is. I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for what you did for me in Jesus. I worship you as only you deserve. And I repent of all the things I lived for before this. Help me settle with a bunch of Christians, a church. Help them help me to grow and to speak to me so that I can keep thinking clearly. Help me to do all this and to live for you as Jesus did. I pray all this in your Son's name. Amen.